Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. I'm Ren Clayton, Sam Anderson, and Nick Rudolph. Guys, how's it going? Sam, what's up?
Nothing much, Ren. Just waiting on the golf season to show up when the weather improves here.
If it ever does,
yeah.
We got another month.
I know. I keep checking the 10-day forecast, just hoping, please be like a 60 or several 60s in a row. And then it's like 40, 40, 50, 40, 30.
160 degree day, but it's 20 mile an hour winds and thunderstorms. And
yeah, exactly. And the low is like 28. Exactly. Yeah. What's up with you guys?
Yeah, about the same. Just wishing it was warmer, but enjoying or at least watching some NBA playoffs, which has been entertaining. A little sore loser in me just with the Timberwolves, how they're playing. But yeah, we'll see if they can rally the troops for game 6 and 7.
Yeah, if there's a 7, one more game in Minneapolis, though. That's good at least to have that opportunity, I guess, not get sent home after 2 games here.
Well, all three of us were at game 3, one of the greatest playoff collapses of all time.
We are witnesses.
What were they? They were up 25 with 3 minutes to go in the third.
Yeah, something like that.
And they lost by 9. They got outscored by 34 points in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no good. And then we're recording this on Wednesday and Tuesday. They lost again. They led the entire game until a couple minutes left in the fourth, like 3-4 minutes left.
Maybe I think they were up 13 with 9 minutes to go, I believe. Yeah. And then Kat was shushing the crowd. And then, yeah.
You guys just want to do the Mount Rushmore of terrible franchises right now? Or
good little tease there. but yeah, no, I mean, first round of NBA playoffs. We're busy right now. I mean, everything's kind of happening. NFL draft, Sam, is happening. Let's get your tight 25-second take on who the Vikings are going to take in the first round.
Oh, boy.
Maybe.
Yeah, so it's tough this year because in the years past, Rick Spielman has been running the show and he was so predictable in what he did and always drafted for need. So the first round was always super predictable, and then they would always trade down in the third and have like 20 picks in the sixth and seventh. This year, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, it's kind of a wild card. He's really analytical and they don't really know what he's going to do. There's a lot of speculation he's going to trade down or try to, but I don't know if they're going to be many suitors because there's a lot of teams reportedly trying to trade down. So I would say my prediction, I think they're going to they're either going to take a corner or a receiver.
Yeah.
I'm going to probably lean towards corner.
Do you have one picked out? Who's the guy from LSU that people have been talking about?
That's Derek Stingley.
Yeah, is he gonna make it down to 12, you think?
No, there's like he's been rising a lot lately. There's rumors he might even go like third to the Texans. Oh. Yeah. Wow. Sauce Gardner is from Cincinnati. He's probably gonna go top 6 or 7. And then I think Trent McDuffie's the third one. He's from Washington. He could realistically make it to us, but we'll see. Yeah, I'm just excited because it's just some new blood. We'll see how things go. And it's just my favorite event of the year, so I'm excited for tomorrow night.
Go ahead.
Have you heard of, or either of you guys heard, that they're talking with the Chiefs in trading the 12 for the Chiefs at the 29 and 30?
I don't know.
I randomly heard that on the radio on my way to work, and I thought it was very specific, and I hadn't seen it anywhere else, so I guess I was skeptical.
But. Interesting.
Yeah, and do the Chiefs have both of those picks?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess, it's a learning Just kind of we get to look back or sit back and see what Kwesi does, what his approach is. Like you said, I mean, first time, I don't know. He is very analytical. That's obvious, and that's what everyone knows about him, but we don't really know what it's going to formulate into. I would guess, like you said, Zam, it's not going to be, you know, draft need, you know. It's probably be, you know, the other side of that. But other than that, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's also just a really interesting draft because there's so many teams that have multiple first round picks, and which is pretty rare. It's usually like one or two, maybe three teams. But this year it's like the Saints, the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Packers,
the Jets, right?
The Jets and the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's literally like, what did I just name? Six teams that have two first rounders, which is wild.
Don't the Jets have three?
Oh, and the Texans too. There might be seven teams that have two first rounders.
Dang. Well, let's get into our documentary. Today's documentary is called When the Garden Was Eden. This came out in October of 2014, directed by Michael Rapaport, an actor. He also voiced it. He's a famous, famously a New Yorker, I guess, is how I should put it. It's about the New York Knicks, the franchise, sort of the start of the franchise through the 70s, specifically covering the team that, or teams that won the NBA Finals in 1970 and 1973. So it covers those teams with like Clyde Frazier and Willis Reed and Phil Jackson and Bill Bradley and others. And that's really just kind of that's kind of the whole thing. It kind of puts into context as far as, you know, the NBA standing at the time, the New York kind of connection and what the fans were like, just kind of describing that. Nothing surprising there, giving us a closer look at these characters that we've probably heard about. We've heard about a lot, obviously. And then kind of putting it into context, I guess, this, you know, directed, produced by Michael Rapaport, like a longtime Knicks fan who, you know, has been a fan when they were struggling, not so much back in the 70s when he was, you know, younger or whatever. So that's kind of the context. It seems like kind of a thing, a movie directed toward like pre-existing Knicks fans, you know, giving them their background, their glory days, as they have been, you know, one of the worst franchises in sports for decades now, I guess some might say. And that's really kind of all it was. It was like 115 minutes or an hour and 15 minutes. And just kind of ended after the 73 championship, and then just did a couple like where are they now with some of the main characters. Nick, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I thought it was all right. I wasn't really blown away by it. It was interesting to look back at like the old Knicks teams, just because I had never looked at those outside of the Knicks being in New York. I never knew why there was so much, you know, publicity about them, because they've never been good in my lifetime, really. And so it was interesting, like reviewing some of the names that, you know, are obviously familiar with, or at least have heard about, that wore Knicks uniforms. Interesting to see Phil Jackson as a player instead of a coach. Interesting to just see some of the teams that they played, and like they had the Lakers kind of featured near the end of it. They seem to, in my opinion, focus more so on the state of basketball, like before, like the Knicks, like as kind of an intro into who the Knicks were as a team. They spent a lot of time kind of setting the scene on like what did the NBA look like back then, which I think was good, and I think that was necessary, because now we view the NBA as being, you know, like all these guys are famous and make so much money, but before it was you know, definitely not the case. Did they say that it was like $21,000 the most the highest paid player was getting, I think, or somewhere around there. Most guys had, you know, jobs outside of basketball and probably made more money there. And so it was interesting to see that. But I felt like they focused almost as much on that as like any other like team, basically. They went through the first championship team. And I feel like they spent a whole lot of time there. And then not that they could have ended it there, but I felt like it was almost a ending of the documentary. And then it was like, oh yeah, by the way, we got, you know, like a whole other decade to go through. And so I was kind of lost at that point, or just lost my interest, because it was building up to that first championship. And then they just tried to keep going with it. So that was kind of my thoughts, at least. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, we're totally on the same page. Pretty much everything you said is spot on to what I'm thinking. It was fun to see New York. I don't know why, but I just really like New York, and it's really fun to see it in like a different time period, like in the thriving 1960s, and especially, I guess, to see it like thriving, but then the Knicks were just nothing and like not a huge part of the scene. Celebrities weren't coming to NBA games back then, things like that. And so it was cool to see that aspect of things, and to see, you know, players making 22,000 where now players are making 50 some million, and to see how the NBA has grown and stuff. But I do agree with you. I think it was too long, in that I think they could have made it shorter, just focused on like one of the championship runs. I didn't realize that so many of the Knicks players were Hall of Famers, which is pretty cool. You know, they had some really awesome teams, and I guess learning about how it was assembled was pretty neat, but they probably spent a little too much time on that, in my opinion. What do you think, Ren?
Yeah, I would say the most interesting part was the stark contrast between the NBA of when it was climbing its way up to popularity compared to nowadays. You know, they talked about how, you know, Major League Baseball and the NFL really hit a stranglehold on, you know, American fans, and the NBA didn't really matter. And now, I mean, NFL and NBA are like have the stranglehold, right? They're the big two. And so that was interesting. And yeah, the stuff maybe before they got into just describing these guys' personalities was the most unique part of the documentary. And I guess kind of what I thought as I was clicking play on this was that it was going to be, you know, I Michael Rapaport, he's this, you know, you hear him talk about the New York, whatever, Knicks all the time. I feel like he's always this loud character. And so I was like, oh, this is just going to be like a, you know, just for Knicks fans. Yeah. So I wasn't like super hyped. And I mean, it kind of was that, right? It was just like, it was very specific for these. And I was like, I was waiting for like the really good story arc, you know, a good beginning, middle and end. And it didn't really have that, because it was just kind of telling us how this went. You could argue that the ending was the, you know, the championships they won, but I felt like the story they were trying to tell was put into context with how bad they are now. Because that's what Rapaport said in the beginning of the 30 for 30. He said that's part of the reason why they're doing this documentary. And then they never really covered that. And obviously it's hard to cover what doesn't like multiple decades in one documentary. But yeah, I guess it just wasn't strong enough of a plot to be a super good documentary for me.
I completely agree. I found myself thinking that throughout. I was like, is this going to get any better? You know, and it just never really hit home where I was like, oh my gosh, that was a story that I really wanted to hear about. It was like, oh, this team was assembled in a cool city and they eventually got pretty good at basketball and won a championship and then another championship 3 years later. And here's what they're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing offensive about the movie or what happened in it or any, like, it was fine. It just wasn't, you know, amazing. I liked learning about Madison Square, the new Madison Square Garden was built in 1968. So it's obviously not new now, but like, that's what they called it then. It was like the new one, they built it. I didn't know that. I knew there had been a new addition, but so I was glad to have learned that. What did we think about the whole Bill Bradley thing? Like, that was an interesting storyline that I didn't see coming. This guy that, like, took a couple years off to be a Rhodes Scholar in England, and he was, like, the NCAA Player of the Year before that, and then he came in, signed for $500,000, and they called him, like, the Great White Hope, which was super cringy, and they came in, and then he said he sucked, but he ultimately played well for his career. Like, he went to the Hall of Fame. So it was like, what did we think of, what was our impression of that guy? You know, like, he went into politics after his career too.
Yeah, I thought for sure he was just gonna like never amount to anything. And then he was like a major player for the rest of the, you know, whole documentary. And so it was interesting that they focused so much on, you know, like, he couldn't walk down the streets of New York without being thrown, you know, tomatoes at him or whatever the stories were. I wonder if, like, you know, if proximity, like, with him being so distinguished as far as, like an Ivy League kid, and then, you know, just proximity within, like, that Northeast region, just if that, like, also helps, you know, add to the legend of him, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, prior to, but, I mean, seems like a super brilliant guy if he's, you know, going on a Rhodes Scholarship, shows you the state of the league, where, you know, he was willing to put the league off for a couple of years just to pursue right. that, and then to come back. I mean, that was his priority, and then he still got, you know, the largest contract ever. So I mean, obviously during that time especially, there was in the documentary touched on this, where he got paid so much, but then some of the other African-American guys that, you know, had similar talents or seemingly better talents didn't get that big contract either. So hearing that, it's not super surprising that he would get more than his African-American counterparts. Not that that's right, but just, like, you know, time and dates type of a thing. But yeah, interesting though.
Yeah, and then I think he ran for president for the nomination against Al Gore, lost in 2000, and that was after he had three terms as a senator. He, like, was a U.S. senator, like, 2 or 3 years after he retired from the NBA, which is a quick turnaround.
It was also funny in his interviews, he almost seemed too smart, where he, like, knew that he wasn't as good as everyone thought he was. You know, because yeah. Like, the Knicks thought he was the next great hope, and all the fans did. And then in the interviews, they were asking about that, and he was like, I wouldn't necessarily say that. Like, I'm going to try my best.
But yeah, he's just like, I knew I wasn't.
Yeah, he's like, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, they showed kind of what these guys did after they retired. Willis Reed, who was, you know, the best player and came back from injury to win the first championship. He was the Knicks head coach 3 years after he retired, which I thought was interesting. I guess you kind of see it nowadays where guys retire, whether it's Jason Kidd or Steve Nash or whatever, but and then they go coach immediately. But I thought that was interesting that he went turned around and was the coach of the team he started on right away.
That's quite the quick turnaround. It seemed like so many of the players had some sort of connection to the Knicks afterward, where they were, like, helping out in the front office, or, well, that was, like, a couple of them, or, like, broadcasting.
Yeah, Walt Frazier did that.
Yeah, it was just kind of wild, like, to think that 4 or 5 of the players ended up contributing in some way to the Knicks again.
And then bringing Phil Jackson back in 2014 or whatever, even though that didn't work that great, but.
No.
That did help me put into context, like, why he like left the Lakers right as their legendary coach, and then went came back to the NBA. At the time, I was like, what's he doing? And it didn't turn out well, clearly, as their president of basketball operations or GM or whatever. But yeah, I guess it makes sense, right? Because that's where he played, and, you know, had a lot of seminal moments. But I don't know. What else? I think that's pretty much anything else that we touch on.
Ren, I was just going to ask you, what did you think of Michael Rapaport and his directing style and the fact that he was in a lot of the scenes, either narrating it or interviewing them? And then I also had to ask, he, like, would randomly, like, throw in his laughter. Like, like, he would react to people, and the last clip or the last thing that would happen is him like being like, ha ha, and then it would stop.
Yeah, I know. Overall, when I saw it on Wikipedia, like directed by Michael Rapaport, I was like, okay, I know he's gonna be in this, and so I was fine with that. He voiced it over, which makes sense. You know, it was from kind of his point of view, a Knicks fan, New Yorker. I thought it was weird that he was wearing shorts when he was interviewing these guys in like a church basement. That was just a weird shot, like a low angle shot of him in his shorts talking to one of the players. But overall, that wasn't offensive. Yeah, if you're going to put the voice of the interviewer in, have a microphone anywhere in his vicinity. Like there was not even a general microphone around. So when you heard him asking questions, it was quiet, and you know that they tried to make it as loud as they could in post, but they just like didn't plan for that or whatever. And then, yeah, some of the edits of the sound bites where he laughed after made for awkward moments, just bad edits, really. There was one specific one that I was like, whoa, how did that get through everybody and make it to air? There was one really bad one, and there was a few other that were not terrible. But so yeah, overall, I didn't have a big beef with it because, I mean, he's an actor directing a thing. You know they're going to put themselves in it. It's just the reality. And yeah, but there was some things that were not good. Should we get to a rating?
Let's do it. I'll get us started.
All right.
I don't have much to add at all. Wasn't a huge fan. It was too long for me. It was a good story, but there was nothing spectacular about it that really kept my attention or that was really memorable about it. And so I'm going to give this one 5.96 flyovers, because I'm a sucker for a good New York City flyover where they're showing all of the skyscrapers and just the city in general. And they did that a couple times at the beginning and the end of this doc. What about you?
Yeah, this one was just like, meh. So I'll just give it a middle of the road 5. I'm going to say 5 ACTs because a cat.
Oh, I forgot Gary about that.
Talking about making his own language, calling cats ACT because it was in alphabetical order. And,
and then he just listed up tons of words and did it with them.
I mean, yeah, just I didn't even try to pay. At first, I was like, all right, like I can follow this. And then he would just like, you know, spur something off and blah, blah, blah. And then you're just like, what is he talking about? And then he's talking about making up languages.
Yeah, he made up a language or something.
We need to talk about this a little bit more.
And then so, he taught it to Bill Bradley or whatever his name. The guy. And they spoke it on the court to talk about plays. And then they interviewed a former guy they played against for the Celtics. He's like, yeah, this was ridiculous. Like, he's like, I threw up my hands. Like how insane is that? This guy made up a gobbledygook language, and then they were using it to call out plays on the court in the NBA.
Yeah, that was absolutely wild. Not nearly as wild as him being on like a game show or a talk show and introducing himself to hundreds of people before going on the talk show, and then literally just being like, everybody stand up. And he went through and named all of the people. Like, what?
Yeah. And I was listening to him say that. I was like, how did that work? Like, would he just stand there for like 7 minutes listing names? And they'll go, oh, you're right again. Like,
yeah, right. Like, who's narrating? Who's emceeing that?
Like, he's on Johnny Carson or whatever.
After like 7, it's like, okay, we get the point.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I insist. I will do all 328 of you. I will not start the show until all 328 of you are named in alphabetical order.
So weird. And then he like wrote a book on memory studies, or he like went into research on memory after he retired. Quite the character. Yeah,
definitely the character of the show. Yeah,
totally.
You said 5. I have it as a exact same score, 5.0, which is a score I've never given before, an exact decimal score. So what are the odds that we do that? I said 5.0 lost finals footage because the 1973 finals, like, they couldn't find the footage of it until 2013. One guy said, like, and it was just horrible quality. Like, it had been damaged, the video. It was so weird. Like, they said it was so late at night because it was in LA. So everyone in New York, like, was asleep for it. Like, it's like almost it didn't happen. So that was like a weird little thing that happened in this. A five because, yeah, nothing, I mean, like we talked about. I guess I came into this wanting it to be a full scope of the history of the Knicks from the beginning until now, or until when this was made. So I wanted it to maybe be a little less in depth on specific eras and then just go bounce, cover the whole gamut. Like give us a holistic view of what the Knicks are, why, when they're good, bad, and everything in between. And that's just not what this was, which was whatever, but I felt like it would have been more appealing to like the common person if it was that, if it had gone through the beginning up until what they did here, but not in as much depth. And then when they started to struggle, you know, you wouldn't have to cover that super intently, but then touch on the players, the Patrick Ewings, you know, that era, obviously the Jordan era. And then Linsanity would be a little section, like all these different things. And it just wasn't that. So yeah, it was fine. It wasn't definitely not one of my favorite ones we've done. So I'll give it 5.0.
Our ranking was a 5.32, which puts it's very low on our list. Number 52 out of 60 that we've now reviewed, right? Ahead of Small Potatoes, Who Killed the USFL, and Charismatic.
All right. Next up, we'll roll right into Mount Rushmore. We're doing terrible franchises. I guess take that for what it is. Just, you know, interpret it however you want. I think the order is Nick, me, Sam. So we'll go in snake draft. I think we're going terrible, you know, pro sports franchises. If I'm wrong, correct me, but Nick, lead us off.
Yeah, Minnesota Timberwolves have to take the cake here. There's no way I'm not taking the Timberwolves at the number one overall pick here. Uh-huh. This is the draft that the Timberwolves were, you know, had dreamed of.
It's been well documented, your feelings about this franchise, and so it's only fitting that you had the first pick.
Let's take a trip through memory lane here. Do you guys remember the first week, first episode? Nick's documentary wish list. Timberwolves, the worst draft run in sports history.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I do.
Oh, from drafting and now we were just before this, we were just talking about Giannis since the Bucks just won tonight. And I feel like Giannis, I mean, just talking about the draft here with the Timberwolves, that's one of the we always talk about Steph Curry and having two picks before Steph Curry and not picking him. And, but I feel like Giannis we have to start talking about that one more with Timberwolves as well. Draft history. Speaking of that, cause we, drafted Shabazz Muhammad, one pick before Giannis. And
what year, do you know what year that was? That was a while ago.
I want to say 14, but I could be wrong there.
2013.
I think it was the
15th pick, so 14 teams are kicking themselves.
Okay. Yeah.
But let me just kick the Timberwolves because they're the worst franchise.
It's bad mojo. They're about to play game six of the first round playoffs. What's it be?
Put it on the
faith in Chuck Lorre or whatever his name is.
Mark Lorre. You're the Chuck Bar.
Chuck Lorre is like the creator of like sitcoms. I don't know why I said that. I think he did Modern Family. I'm gonna go with my first pick. To me, it is an obvious pick when you think of this category. It popped in my head right first is the Detroit Lions. They're just always bad, it seems. And we don't have any strong rules for the parameters of this, but I feel like whatever the rules were, the Lions would fit. They growing up, they were just so bad for so long, the Joey Harrington, you know, time period, just they just never were good. I remember, you know, watching the Packers and the Vikings growing up, and I was like, why are the Lions just never good? And they just, you know, they're just bad. You know, they had a couple good years, but even that, I don't know if they like won a playoff game with Stafford, or maybe they won one, but yeah, they're just always putrid. Sam?
And their other players just want to retire early, and yeah, it's not good. All right. First pick for me, I'm going to go Cleveland Browns. Terrible franchise. Really haven't been good in our lifetime. Their owner, Jimmy Haslam, is terrible. And yeah, they had the run of quarterbacks where they just couldn't get it right. They kind of got it right in Baker Mayfield, and then it went downhill anyways. And then they decided to trade for a guy who has 22 charges against him. And so, yeah, not a huge fan of them right now. And
they're developing they're like investing $1 million or millions of dollars for their player recovery division. I don't know if you guys saw that.
No,
everybody was making a comment about how it's like player performance and recovery, I believe, is like what it's labeled as. And they're like, like, you know, like that's pretty ironic that Deshaun Watson's coming and now you're investing all this money in player recovery. Like, what does that mean?
Right.
Weird.
I'm going to go baseball with this one. And I don't know if the stats can really back it up, but the Baltimore Orioles are always really bad. And they have been most of our lives. I mean, Cal Ripken Jr. was there, but they're just one of those franchises that, I mean, they're in a really hard division, the AL East. So they get the Yankees and the Red Sox every year, but they rarely contend. They rarely spend money, and just doesn't seem like a very fun franchise to be a fan of.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I'm going to stay in Major League Baseball and go with the Kansas City Royals. It's kind of the same category for me as the Lions was. It's a division of the team that I grew up, you know, rooting for. And they're always bad. The difference here is they did win a championship, probably, I think it was 2015-ish. And then like 2 years later, they were horrible again. They're the ultimate small market in Major League Baseball that kind of can't, you know, pay anybody, and it sucks. They've obviously had good, you know, a lot of legendary players, but so they're not as, you know, dramatically horrible of a franchise, I guess. And this is necessarily as, you know, long term, but for a while they've been really bad with just a little blip where they were not. So the Royals.
Good stadium, though. Good barbecue.
I've not been.
I didn't know.
That's what I've heard.
I did not know that they were looking for a new stadium. Did you know that?
No.
I had a patient tell me that, that they were, like, trying to get a new stadium, and I don't know at what, you know, point that is or anything. But I always thought it was a cool thing that they have Arrowhead right in the same parking lot, or sharing the same parking lot, and just the tailgating. And of course I think that's cool because we don't have that in any of the big Minnesota sports teams. But
what about Target Center and Target Field?
I mean, like, tailgating though, like,
yeah, I know. Well, you don't tailgate in Ramp A. Yeah. Or the Skyway.
In the Skyway, that's what I like. All right, I'm going to go with, first off, I'm going to go with baseball, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. So not the Rays, but before the Rays were the Rays, the Devil Rays, they were awful. And I never remember them being good. And I feel like they were always like one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
All because they had devil in their name.
I remember that They were on like the cover of Sports Illustrated because I think they had set a record or something, and for most losses, like 3 consecutive years, something crazy like that.
Can I just I just picture their state, not to go back to stadiums again, but I just pictured their stadium as like falling apart as well. It just seemed like it wasn't like very nice, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's falling apart, but it is maybe the worst. I mean, definitely the worst stadium in Major League Baseball. It's in one of the last thing indoor ones, one of two, I think. And it's just brutal. Balls hit the ceiling. And yeah, it's
awful. Yeah, the balls hitting the ceiling is like the most unique thing ever. It's like, how is that a thing in professional sports? But
I know. It's like a high school like volleyball match in a small gym.
Yeah. I feel like I'm playing like backyard baseball again with Pablo Sanchez and somewhere, and there's some weird bounce of some sort. The other franchise I'm going to go with is the Charlotte Hornets. I feel like they've never been good in our lifetimes, at least.
I was reading something about bad teams, and they said it's MJ's pet project.
They didn't even exist for a while. They were the Charlotte Bobcats, right?
Oh, yeah. Then the Bobcats. Yeah, we gotta include them.
Bobcats are so bad. Emeka Okafor.
I forgot about them.
I mean, that was recent that they changed the name, right?
Yeah.
Not super long ago.
Because it was the New Orleans Hornets. Because it used to be New Orleans Hornets,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
So confusing. Okay, I'm gonna go with the Knicks. I mean, you know, we just did this movie review about them. Speaks for itself. I mean, we covered them winning 2 titles, which is better than a lot of these teams on our lists here. But yeah, they've been that bad, so bad for so many decades, and they're also in New York, so they get to be the poster boy for a horrible franchise in you know, all the talk shows, all that stuff. So. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go with the Sacramento Kings. They have not made the playoffs in 16 years, which is the longest drought in the NBA right now. They haven't been good since basically like one of our – probably our first years actually remembering basketball, like 2004 when against like the Shaq Kobe Lakers. They were good. And had a chance to win a finals, but they never did. And yeah, they just make terrible decisions, whether it's in the draft, drafting Marvin Bagley over Luka. They seem to do that every year, so I'll go with them. And then I'm gonna go with the Buffalo Sabres, who I jokingly became a fan of in like 2012, and was like, I'm just gonna pick, because they were like the worst team in the league. I was like, I'm gonna pick tweet that they're gonna win the Stanley Cup in like 2020. I was like, that's so many years from now, they'll be good by then, and everyone will think I'm a genius. And since then, since 2012, this is their finish in the league. I'm looking it up right now. 23rd in the league, 30th, 30th, 23rd, 26th, 31st, 27th, 25th, 31st.
Yes.
Brutal. Yeah, they're really bad.
You really went out on a limb. That's I'm sorry that it didn't, your freezing cold take prediction didn't work out.
I know, I deleted it, so no one will ever know. Freezing cold takes, yeah, we'll never retweet it.
All right, I'm going with the surprisingly not taken off the board Jacksonville Jaguars. They're brutal in every way. Urban Meyer. I mean, I could just say Urban Meyer and then be done talking about them. Like, yeah. That was recently, and that was a whole cluster. But, I mean, they've just been bad for so long. Just mediocrity. I mean, not mediocrity. Like, just terrible teams for
– not one random season that they were good.
Yeah, I can't – I mean, I guess maybe there was one where they made it through a couple rounds of the playoffs, didn't they, fairly recently? And then the next year they were, like, terrible again.
But, in the AFC Championship a game, yeah. And leading against Tom Brady, and then Tom Brady brought him back to win it.
With Bortles, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that also, even I remember when that was happening, I was like, what's happening? This never happens. Yeah, and then the Urban Meyer stuff, like, it's just all just so brutal down there. Yeah.
So maybe with the last pick, I'm surprised this one lasted, but New York Jets.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, of course, like, you know, a lot of the ESPN people like the Jets, or there's a couple of them that do. And so you always get to hear about the boneheaded mistakes, but it's always a joke of, you know, whoever they pick will, you know, be the opposite in a draft, or they can never keep teams together and everything like that. I feel like it's kind of like the Browns junior type of quarterback situation lately. So
yeah, the revolving door of quarterbacks. All right, sum us up, Sam.
We did the Mount Rushmore of worst franchises. Rudy went with the Timberwolves, Devil Rays, Hornets, and Jets. Ren went with the Lions, Royals, Knicks, and Jaguars. And I went with the Browns, Orioles, Kings, and Sabres. Woof, those are some bad ones.
And Sam's a big fan of half of his teams.
Yeah, ride or die for the Browns and the Buffalo. Alrighty. Sam, do you have a documentary wish list you'd like to pitch for us?
I do. I think one of us recently, it might have been you, Ren, or maybe not, talked about Kobe. Did either one of you talk about Kobe? I feel like it happened at some point.
As like but a anyway, pitch?
Yeah.
I didn't. I don't think we did.
Okay, maybe.
Sorry, for like documentary?
Yeah.
Wish list? I did it like on the year anniversary of him dying, I think.
Okay. Well, this one would be a little bit different because I think that they could do a documentary that focuses on either, and we're coming off of this Knicks documentary, which kind of inspired the thought, but it could focus on the three-peat of the early 2000 Lakers. I think there'd be a ton of awesome footage, but they could focus on how it came to be. I think it'd be more interesting than this Knicks one in that the Lakers signed Shaq away from the Magic for like a record contract at the time. Then they traded for Kobe in the draft and how that pairing worked. And then the eventual like downfall of it. And there was so much drama between Shaq and Kobe after, winning 3 of 4 years. That it led to them having to pick Kobe over Shaq. And I think it would just make for an awesome documentary. And obviously you couldn't interview Kobe about it anymore, but there's enough interviews with him and his thoughts on Shaq that you could put those in. You could see all the cool highlights from when they were one of the most dominant teams in league history. And then you could also hopefully get Shaq to be in the interviews and, you know, talk about his love of Kobe and their downfalls and things like that.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Shaq would be a great interview. He has so many, it seems like, thoughts, you know, about the whole relationship and, you know, how he wishes he had left it better and things like that. So, that'd be great.
Kobe, you can't do without me. Kobe, can't do without me. I remember I was rapping in that nightclub. I don't know how many. It was a fair amount of years after they split, right? Or was that when he won with Miami or something?
Oh, could be.
You remember?
Shaq played for like every team, like half the teams in the league.
So I have a friend that lives in St. Louis. I might have told you guys this already, but he was at the St. Louis Mardi Gras tent party this last year. And he literally just sends me a snap, and it's Shaq DJing in the front of this Mardi Gras tent. And I was like, is that Shaq? He's like, yup, he's our DJ today.
Oh, why?
Shaq apparently just randomly DJs places.
In St. Louis, too, right? Randomly.
Yeah, Mardi Gras in St. Louis. I was like, that is incredible. I wish I was there.
Huh. Amazing.
Yeah.
All right, I'll read off what we're going to do for our next podcast. This next one is called Brian and the Boz, in the next 30 for 30. Former linebacker Brian Bosworth unveils a storage locker to his son Max that contains memorabilia from his college and brief professional career. The elder Bosworth reflects on his life and career, making note of an emerging second persona, the Boz, that had begun to subsume his life. Yeah, this is a weird one that we're going to watch, so we'll look forward to that. I've seen it, yeah.
I've seen it. I don't remember that take or that spin or perspective, I guess, on it, so that'll be interesting.
Sweet. This was fun, guys. We should do it again soon. Thanks for listening.